Kelly and Scafflestead here from Hoonah, Alaska, former Navy vet, here to talk about my experience. I was living back home in Hoonah, took a little bit of time, graduated in 2007, took a little bit of time just kind of working around town and, you know, figuring out my path, whether I wanted to go to college and trade school or whatnot, and eventually chose the military and joined in 2008. Originally, my military ambitions, I wanted to do the Coast Guard. And at that particular time, they were really hard to get in. You know, they're really good branch of service, but they're, you know, one of the smallest branches of service. And the recruiter I was talking to kept postponing, like, try back, you know, fall. Oh, we're, filled up, try back in the winter. And at the time, there was a Navy recruiter here in Juneau who was working around the Coast Guard office. And, you know, he tried recruiting me, and I told him, you know, right away that I wasn't interested, but he still maintained a friendly presence every time he seen me around. And, you know, he's like, well, let me see if I could help you out. And so, you know, he'd, you know, kind of get me in touch, and he did do a good job, like, you know, giving me the contact info of people I need to talk to up in Anchorage and whatnot. And when it kept getting pushed back, I'm sitting in his office, and he's like, well, you know, you keep trying. And literally the thing that intrigued me is I saw a globe sitting on his desk, and it had a bunch of white dots on it. And I was like, what happened to your globe? And he's like, oh, pulled it out. And he's like, in my, I think he was in that 16 years or 17 years at the time, I believe. But it's like, in my entire Navy career, these are all the places the Navy took me around the world. And I was like, that's really cool. You know, growing up in Hoonah, not going to many places, I've always had an ambition to travel. I was like, you went to all these places in the Navy. And he's like, yeah, he got to talking about his experience. And I kind of realized, you know, maybe I should take a chance on this and try, you know, my hand here and see how many places I could travel to. And so ended up shifting gears and going to Navy due to, you know, the desire to want to travel. All the way from, you know, MEPS, where I signed up in, I'm not on official duty yet, but you're signing up there in Anchorage, which is February 2008, ended up going shipping out in May of 2008. And you know, usually when you get up there, they want to get you in as soon as they can. And what they ended up, you know, they want to get you in as soon as you can because they feel like if you wait too long, you'll change your mind. You know, I was always taught to kind of be a man of my word. So, you know, if I tell them I'm going to show up at a certain date, I'm showing up. And I'm also one of those guys, I don't like to, you know, maybe it's changed nowadays, but particularly at the time, it's like, okay, I know I'm leaving this date, so I want to spend some time at home and enjoy it and kind of, you know, get ready to go instead of just turn and burn type deal. And I ended up joining with my cousin who's, you know, graduated high school with me, is the same age. And, you know, I remember getting up to Anchorage, officially swearing in, and then literally staying the night there. And then first flight out, flew out, you know, the morning, early morning from Anchorage on the 6th and got into Chicago. You know, Navy boot camp is held there out of Chicago area. And we kind of essentially the first ones there, checked into the USO at the airport, and we had to wait there for about, you know, 6-7 hours for them to come in, tell us our bus is out, take us to boot camp. So, you know, that was kind of the first official day I remember. Boot camp was, I found it to be pretty easy. You know, I can't get into too many particulars as far as like training. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of things people could look up, you know, but, you know, as I do recall, you know, signing something, can't talk about particulars on the training in there. But as far as the physical activity and whatnot, I didn't find it to be as hard. You know, some say it's like, well, there's a difference between Navy and other branches, but even people I know in other branches, not, you know, definitely not trying to take anything away from anyone, but it's like, you know, I come from a family of wrestlers. I was competitive in wrestling, still, you know, do a little bit of martial arts to this day, and you know, pretty, you know, good shape, all things considered. And it's like, you know, I know some of these folks who I could probably work out harder than and whatnot. I you know, made it through boot camp and other branches. So, you know, it leads me to believe that I could, you know. And so, you know, Navy particularly, you're doing more seaboard training. And there's a lot of, you know, learning, you know, classes there. And it's not so demanding, I feel, on, you know, the physical fitness part. You know, they do have their standards, but and it's not, I wouldn't say it's not particularly, depending on your fitness level, it's not, you know, it can get tiring at times. But, you know, I went in shape, and I found it to be, you know, a breeze. It is boot camp after all, so it's like it's not particularly comfortable at the same time, where it's like, you know, your instructors are on your case, you're kind of isolated and secluded for 8 weeks, and only way to contact home is by letters. I think, you know, at the time I think it was probably the last time I've wrote letters was in boot camp, and I think before that was like elementary school, so it's like I had to refresh, you know, writing letters, and you know, a lot of things you want to know on the outside world, on, you know, what's going on in sports or what's going on at home, et cetera. And it's like, you know, after that 8 weeks go by, you're like, oh wow, you know, I missed out on all this, you know. But you know, by and large, I found it'd be easy. You know, you got to stay focused, and you're there just to train, and that's it. And it's not fun in that regard, but you know, I didn't find it to be bad. You know, it was funny because I mentioned I joined with my cousin, and we were told, like, okay, if you guys want to be in the same division, you can't draw attention that you're family, because then they'll just intentionally separate you. Which I thought was kind of funny, because then in my particular division, I had two brothers that were in there, and I think there was like, you know, two cousins or something like that. But we got separated, because the first day, like, you get processed like you're, you know, your piece of equipment or something. It's like 2 days of just, you know, going to your medical stuff, getting your stuff issued to you, mailing your stuff you showed up with home, getting your haircuts, all that. I, you know, wear glasses and contacts, and I showed up in my contacts. Well, you can't wear contacts the duration there. So the contacts you show up with, you got to put them in your case, put them in your box to mail home, and you're just wearing these really dorky looking boot camp style glasses. I still have somewhere to this day, but, you know, it makes you look like you're wearing a big magnifying glass. And so I was telling my cousin, I was like, hey, listen, like, you kind of got to be my eyes. I can't see you. So, you know, you kind of, so we can stay in the same division, need you to pay attention to where I'm going. You know, I can't, you know, walk around here blind and, you know, asking where my cousin's at. And somehow we got separated, and I, you know, don't know for sure, but I just remember every time, you know, to keep us occupied while we're processing, I have you march around the room. And I tried to, you know, every time I'd pass people who I thought was him, I, you know, whisper, you know, my cousin's name, and he'd, you know, usually respond. And then I knew we were kind of in trouble when I didn't hear him, and somehow we got separated. Well, you know, luckily, we didn't get separated too far. We were in what they call, you know, your brother division. You have your neighboring division that goes to all your training and stuff. And a lot of times you're just right across the hall from each other. So, you know, we ended up being close to each other in that division there. So I do remember this about, this is why I brought my cousin up. I do remember the difference between my instructor and his, because he had an instructor that was really upbeat and positive and motivated. He'd still kind of crack down on you if he had to, but you'd always joke. And my instructor in my division was a lot more serious. And his instructor knew that. So he would always come in, and they were, and, you know, friends, you know. So he would always come in and crack jokes that were so funny and make us laugh, knowing that if we laugh at our instructor, it piss him off, and he would make us do push-ups. So that became a challenging. So, you know, I don't remember the names or anything particularly, but other than that, you know, I remember, you know, my cousin's instructor being a lot more relaxed, and he knew that, you know, if he'd always get us to laugh at our instructor, and which we'd pay for in a bunch of push-ups and PT before bed and stuff. So, you know, over time, you know, after you spend 8 weeks together and they know who's going to make it, you know, they end up being more relaxed. But I remember my instructor being a lot more serious, and, you know, my cousin's instructor, you know, being a lot more relaxed. You know, you're meeting a bunch of people, and of course, you know, you can tell who's different. You know, you got, you know, people who are like, you know, white Southern folks who can relate to each other being there, you know, or like, you know, Black folks who are from, you know, city that can relate, and Asian folks, and, you know, Hispanic folks. And I had so many people, you know, like, you know, Filipinos come up and speak to me in Filipino, and I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah, I don't understand. And it's like, no, they're like, Filipino? No. It's like, and I have Hispanic folks come up and talk to me in Spanish, and I'm like, what's that? And they're like, oh, no Spanish? And it's like, no. I was like, well, you know, and then like everyone, you know, kind of draw a little bit of attention, like, well, what are you? And I was like, oh, I'm Alaska native. And everyone's like, I'm from Alaska, and you're native, like, you know. And they kind of ask a general question, like, oh, well, you know, does that mean you're Eskimo or something? And then you kind of break it down to them a little bit and give them more of an understanding of your particular culture. Then they're like, oh, wow, you know, and kind of, and that's kind of like throughout the duration of my Navy career, you know, you get people who would be interested in, and kind of mind blowing in a way, I guess, you know, how different the cultures are, because, you know, they kind of think it's, you know, I don't, you know, like one or two tribes, you know, they don't realize how vast the native culture in Alaska in general are and how unique each group is. And when you explain like how unique Tlingit people are, and that's kind of one of the things I enjoyed about meeting new people and traveling the world, is being a Tlingit person out in the world and telling people about it, you know, because it's a small group of people on a, you know, a large populated planet. And you know, when you get a chance to educate them and tell them a little bit of who the Tlingit people are, it's, you know, pretty neat, and, you know, cool that they show an interest in that. So racism, I wouldn't say that. You have stuff, I think, kind of very mildly, you know, I don't know if necessarily racism, but kind of ride the racial lines. You know, to me, racism is a pretty serious thing, in my opinion. It get, you know, tossed around kind of loosely. It's a pretty serious thing, and I don't feel by and large that, you know, the Navy or the majority of my peers had it out for me or against me due to the fact that I'm Native. You would have people, and one of the annoying things about explaining the culture is, you know, sometimes that fascination would get silly and kind of more on the kind of disrespectful lines, but very few and far between. You know, like when I first, you know, checked into my command, you know, you get a few folks like, oh, you're Alaska Native, well, you pal around with me and I'll take you under my wing, and they, you know, instantly, you know, think it's cool, like, you know, exaggerate your culture and joke on it. And it's like, nah, that's not cool. Now, a lot of my buddies who, you know, who come from all walks of life, you know, whether it's, you know, white folks, black folks, Hispanic, you know, Asian, you know, East Coast, West Coast, North, South, you name it. A lot of them, I mean, you know, you build that camaraderie in the military where you can joke on each other about everything. But at the same time, you know, it was really neat that by and large, through my experience, a lot of people, when they learn about the culture, would be very respectful and interested in wanting to learn more sincerely. You know, you'd occasionally, like I said, very few and far between, you get guys who are really, you know, kind of disrespectful. But, you know, it's like, you know, they kind of, it's easy to avoid those kind of people. And, you know, it kind of annoy me, like when people talk about it as like some silly fascination, you know, like, do you guys always eat, you know, like raw whale or something, like something, you know, silly like that. And, you know, that'd be dumb. You know, it's like, you know, I just told you a little bit about the culture, you know, like ask like smart questions, you know. And I get it, if you don't know the culture, like what is a smart question? I guess you shouldn't like walk on eggshells worrying about like being offended if you genuinely don't know. I think you could kind of just tell, I think, how people come off, their sincerity in it, you know, because I've had people who genuinely ask, like, you know, like I saw, you know, stuff on Alaska, like, does your culture, you know, eat like, you know, raw meat, you know, in this capacity or something, and you could tell they're genuinely interested and whatnot. And it's like, you know, I could, you know, do that, but, you know, I could respect, you know, that and educate people. But, you know, when you're kind of talking like, you know, you're bizarre and, you know, whatnot, it's like, you know, have a little respect for, you know, people's background and stuff like that. And so that's kind of where I come at with that, because as someone who's traveled around the world, a lot of cultures are bizarre if you're not used to it. But, you know, you want to respect them as people and their way of doing things, and, you know, try to educate yourself the best you can. So maybe you ask stuff that's silly to them, but it's like, you know, I think there's a way to come off sincere and say, hey, listen, I don't know, so I'm trying to know. I think in some aspects, the Tlingit people being, you know, people that live by the sea, I felt very comfortable. Been a lot smaller vessels and rougher waters, so, you know, going on the type of vessels that I've traveled on, it's like, you know, a lot of people thought it was crazy to spend so much time out at sea, and I was like, it's not even bad. You know, it's like, I've had to camp out in a lot worse weather on a lot smaller, you know, crappier boats. So, you know, it's this is pretty good. On top of it, you know, you get to go see some of the coolest places around. So I think in that aspect, there's ways, you know, growing up in Huna prepared me. In other aspects, you know, it's something I had to learn on the go. You know, my parents, grandparents, you know, and, you know, kind of my family, you know, kind of taught me, you know, to be respectful of people and, you know, introduce yourself and, you know, don't be afraid to meet new people and be polite and whatnot. So, you know, I had those going, but I think when you grow up in Huna and you don't get out as much, it is still, you know, kind of need to adjust, you know, to being just kind of thrown in the big old world, you know. At least, you know, I felt I did. You know, some people handle it differently. I didn't, you know, I felt I caught on, but kind of like every time I got to like boot camp or A school or ultimately my commands, you know, I kind of had an ease in the process, feel people out, see what's up. And because, you know, you meet people from all walks of life, it could be overwhelming coming from a small town and then all of a sudden meeting a bunch of people from all different backgrounds all at once. So, you know, that could be kind of, you know, a little intimidating. In hindsight, you know, I've learned so much since then that, you know, it doesn't bother me. But at a particular time, it was like, oh, wow, that's kind of much. So I feel like, you know, growing up in Hoonah and not getting out more, you don't get that much experience meeting, you know, and interacting. With the rise of tourism, you know, you get a lot more. But, you know, at that time, you know, when I was growing up, tourism was such a new thing. So, you know, I didn't get the opportunity to meet, you know, people from all walks of life. So kind of initially had its overwhelming moments, but you know, by and large, I think, you know, as far as the physical toughness, mental toughness, you know, growing up in Hoonah's taught me, you know, things that helped me cope with the military. As far as, you know, other things, you know, kind of interacting with people, you know, kind of, you know, had to learn on the go. So kind of just operate on a ship in the Persian Gulf and kind of go where needed. So, you know, sometimes, you know, me being on an aircraft carrier, sometimes, you know, you kind of, you be in the Persian Gulf, but maybe you're assisting missions in Afghanistan, or maybe you're, you know, Iraq. Those are kind of the main ones. But, you know, depending on where you're needed, you know, we've kind of off the coast of Yemen a little bit for missions there, off the coast of Somalia. You know, particularly my second deployment with, you know, the Arab Spring going on. If I do recall, I don't believe we spent too much time in the Mediterranean, but you're kind of close to Libya, so you're kind of on hand in case you need assistance there. So kind of where needed, but predominantly in the Persian Gulf, operating, you know, helping operations in Iraq, Afghanistan. Remember it being particularly hot. You know, you don't get a, you know, a hot day around these parts in Hoonah, you know, Juneau areas, you know, probably 90 degrees. You're like, wow, you know. But when 90 degrees is their winter weather, and it's like, oh geez. And then you're in there in the summertime and it's well over the hundreds, and you're like, oh my, you know, instantly sweating, you know. And even to this day, there's not, you know, and I've been to warm areas, but I mean, particularly being in the Middle East, you know, at least for me, you know, stepped outside and instantly started sweating. I was like, gosh, I better drink more water, pass out here and dry up. I was aviation ordnance tech, or just, you know, simply abbreviated AO. Aviation ordnance tech is you know, you work in the weapons department that pertain to aircraft. My particular division, we're part of the bomb assembly division, where we would build the bombs for the aircraft. You know, that was our main one, but we'd handle occasionally, you know, missiles and rounds for the aircraft, guns and stuff like that. But predominantly, we're building bombs, ranging from 500,000 or biggest 2,000-pound bombs. I mean, you kind of see, like, occasionally, you know, occasionally we'd have like captain's call or something, and they kind of tell us what we're doing in the area, and we'd see like videos of pilots drop. But, you know, just kind of from their perspective, you're not really, you know, seeing particularly, you're watching them take out targets or whatnot, and that's about the extent of it. But, you know, I myself didn't, you know, experience, you know, any combat firsthand. You know, you're in the combat zone, but, you know, it's, you know, the soldiers, like a Marines and Army guys, are on the ground, you know, seeing the bulk of the combat, and we're just kind of, you know, the distance assisting. The main one I was on is the USS George H.W. Bush, named after President 41, George H.W. Bush, Bush Sr., CVN 77. That was my main command. I also deployed on the USS Nimitz. I volunteered for that deployment. USS George H.W. Bush is particularly special to me because I'm what you call a plank owner to it. Plank owner meaning you're part of the original crew who helped commission the ship, bring the ship to life. You are symbolically, in a way, recognized as part owner. You know, me being a, you know, lower ranking Navy guy and only doing a term, you know, you don't have like no pull or nothing. But like, I do believe, like, if I were to go there and check in on the quarterdeck and tell them I'm a plank owner, they'd look it up and they'd technically have to announce me on board that ship. And they only do that usually for higher personnel, or if you're plank owner, you're kind of recognized in that realm. So, you know, I was told, you know, that, you know, they would have to announce you on board if we would go there, you know. And that was really cool too, you know, to get to be a part of something like that. commission a ship, because, you know, who would ever thought? I mean, you know, I'm sure, you know, depending on people's experience, you know, a lot of military vets out of Hoonah, you probably did cool things. You know, perhaps, I don't know for sure, but perhaps, you know, there may be other plank owners too. But, you know, plank owner to an aircraft carrier, and to think how big those ships are, and, you know, what's the likelihood coming from Hoonah, Alaska, small Tlingit village, and you get to go and, you know, kind of be part of Navy history and get to be recognized as, you know, part owner to a ship, particularly one as mighty as an aircraft carrier like the George H.W. Bush, you know, is pretty cool and special. With the Bush being a part of that, and the reason that's so special is not, one, just being part of Navy history. Literally, when I check into the command, it's still in the shipyards, and it literally had lots of work to do. And I remember getting to the shipyards in October 2008, and, you know, the shipyard's just working around the clock. And remember getting there, and you can kind of see it standing tall, but you see clearly there's people welding and grinding and putting stuff on there. And yeah, I get there in October, and like, commissioning's in January. And you're like, oh, wow, okay. I hope they get it done in time. But, you know, they end up getting it done, and, you know, they end up having the ceremony. And they just starting off, and not even my first year in the military, you know, it is getting to be a part of the commissioning ceremony and getting to meet former President Bush and, you know, his wife, Barbara Bush. That, you know, kind of blew my mind. You know, it kind of, to this day, you know, kind of makes you look, especially, you know, he recently passed, you know, this is in 2019, and, you know, last year he passed away in 2018, and totally just caught me off guard. I think that was the main thing. You know, it's one thing if you're like attending an event, you know, like we knew he's coming on board, but, you know, we're still at work, and, you know, I go to the chow hall. I remember sitting there, and during our lunch break, we were eating chow, and of course, anytime anyone important comes on board the ship, chow's amazing that day. You know, generally it's not bad, but it's, you know, it's just kind of so-so. But this time, man, we had, like, you know, turkey, and, you know, it was like Thanksgiving dinner basically. And you kind of hear on the mess decks, like, you know, a bunch of cameras snapping, and you hear a big crowd coming down the hall. And so we suspected, because it was the day that he was supposed to be on board, we're like, that's probably him. So the whole mess deck get quiet all of a sudden. Where I was sitting, there was one of like three entryways into the chow hall. And, you know, I was kind of like in the, you know, middle entrance there. And I'm kind of sitting like right next to it, and, you know, kind of where my back is turned. And we're kind of looking like, is that, you know, the former president? And the commanding officer was with him, and he ended up hearing the whole mess decks get silent, because, you know, everyone's, you know, sitting there chattering during chow and everything like that. And all of a sudden it got just absolutely silent. So he runs ahead of, you know, the media and President Bush and his wife there. And he ended up, you know, saying, hey, guys, you know, I know Mr. and Mrs. Bush are on their way right now. Treat it like a normal work day. Don't bombard them with questions or, you know, overwhelm them, but if they talk to you, be respectful. Just kind of, you know, treat it, you know, just kind of act normally, you know, act casual. So I'm like, okay. It's like, yeah, you know, go back to eating. Everyone slowly starts talking again, and I'm like, yeah, you know, probably, maybe if I'm lucky, see him from a distance as he walks by. Well, sitting at one of the entryways with my back turned, you know, like, literally I think about like a minute or so later, I feel a hand on my shoulder, and I look back, and it's President Bush, and next to me, and, you know, my friend that were sitting there, and he just kind of like, you know, has his hand on, you know, my one on my shoulder, one on my friend's, and he kind of like, how are you gentlemen doing? And he kind of like, we kind of looked at each other kind of puzzled, and we're like, you know, trying to, you know, greet him. And he kind of like leans down, he's like, my, you know, the Navy sure feeds you guys good these days. And we remember chuckling, and we're like, oh, maybe. And the first thing I kind of uttered was like, maybe you should stay on board more often, and they'll feed us like this every day. And he kind of laughed, and he's like, I know how that's like. He's like, I was in World War II, and trust me, I bet they had a lot worse then. And I was like, yeah, I believe that, sir. And he's like, well, you know, where are you gentlemen from? And he shakes my friend's hand, and I, you know, this friend, I believe, he's like, oh, from California. And he's like, oh, you know, California, great state, you know, been there many times, you know. And he's like, really, really cool. He's like, how about you, sir? And he shakes my hand, and I'm like, I'm from Alaska, sir. And he's like, Alaska? And he's like, wow. And he kind of pauses, and I was like, I'm just kind of nodding. I'm like, yeah. He's like, wow, you're far from home, aren't you? And I kind of chuckle, and I was like, yeah, I guess I am. And he's like, that's a really cool state. And he's like, well, I'm honored to meet you, gentlemen. You know, this is a fine ship, and I'm proud of your guys' service, and thank you for everything you do. You know, God bless you guys. I'm so proud to be a part of the ship. And he just pats us on the back, and we're just like, thank you, sir. You know, I'm new to the Navy at the time, so he, at the time, I didn't even do anything other than just complete my training at boot camp. So, but for him to be so kind and generous, and then after he did that, he starts going down the line greeting people, and then before he takes off, Barbara Bush comes up and shakes her hands, like, nice to meet you, gentlemen. And we're like, nice to meet you, ma'am. And they take off, and they start greeting people. And so I just remember thinking that was super cool. And I think regardless of, you know, people's politics and stuff, are, at least, you know, in regards to, you know, President Bush and his wife, like, through my experience, they were really kind. And the whole entire ship was to honor, it was an honor of his name and whatnot. And every interaction you see, you know, he's giving props to the sailors and, you know, the troops and everything like that. And I was like, you know, that's really cool. You know, this big day for you, honoring you, and like, you know, the thing you want to talk about the most, kind of talking about how proud you are of the sailors on board and whatnot. And I was like, that's really cool. And it, you know, was, you know, really nice to see someone who's really kind and humble like that. So, you know, that's definitely one of the big things that stood out to me, particularly the commissioning ceremony, you know. And like I said, I was only in for like 6-7 months at the time and got to do that. Now, the day of the commissioning, because you bring the ship to life and you, you know, it's cold January day, you know, and all the sailors are in their dress uniforms standing on the pier. And so I'm thinking, this would be cool, be a part of bringing the ship to life. You know, okay, maybe it's not so cool standing out on the pier for a while. It'd be cool to be a part of the ceremony, and everyone gives their speeches and whatnot. And then they say, bring the ship to life, and everyone runs on board and brings it to life. Well, I got pulled from that because I ended up working a security detail kind of with the security officer of the ship. And although I didn't officially work for him, I did have to work in conjunction with Secret Service, because George W. Bush, it was the last 10 days of his presidency before President Obama took over. And so since the President of the United States was on board, Secret Service had to, you know, they set up the hangar bay kind of as like, I believe, as like an exhibit to kind of show off, you know, President Bush's career, Bush Sr., that is. And since that day the President of the United States came on board, he was going to privately tour it with him. You know, the Secretary of State was there, because like how I mentioned earlier, how they announce you on board if you're important personnel. Like if you're the President of the United States, I believe it's they don't say the President of the United States. They just say United States of America, you know, on deck or whatever they say, but they announce it. When they say United States of America, they're referring to, you know, President of the United States. And then you hear them announce the Vice President and then the Secretary of State and, you know, like, you know, Secretary of Defense. And you're like, wow, you know. And now I didn't get to meet or even hardly see George W. Bush, you know, at the active president, but he, being assigned to that security detail, like I had to guard the hatch and make sure when the president was in there, regardless of rank, and mind you, I'm still a low ranking guy, but you're the security officer of the ship and Secret Service, like even if someone pulls rank on you, you got to turn them away. Now that's kind of intimidating when you're new. And I've, you know, kind of got chewed out a little bit by higher ranking guys. Like, you know, you see my ranking, it's like, what department you work for? You're not going to let me through. I'm, you know, this rank or that rank. And it's like, you know, sorry, sir, with all due respect, I got to tell you, go around. And, you know, they went and told the security officer, like, you know, so-and-so is up there and he's, you know, a low-ranking guy and not let me through. It's like, well, you got to go around, you know. And so, and then I thought it was kind of cool, you know, because technically I got to work with, you know, the Secret Service, but, you know, of course, it's just kind of a very minor capacity. And I thought it was kind of funny because I'm standing at the hatch in my dress uniform. I'm not even, like, armed or anything. I'm just standing there, and they're standing there in their glasses and their suits and their earpiece, and, you know, and I'm just kind of like, you know, okay, like, can we even talk to these guys? I just remember kind of just lightly talking to the guy I was standing next to. And I'm just like, so how's it? You know, I think the first thing I said was something like, how's it working in the Secret Service? And he's like, it's pretty chill. It's interesting job. And I was like, right on. Like, well, you know, you guys dress nice. He's like, you too. And I just kind of chuckled and was like, cool, you know. And he's like, well, where are you from? Alaska. And, you know, every time you say you're from Alaska, I'm like, oh, wow, okay. You know, get some sort of reaction like, oh, whoa, you know, that's cool. And so, but yeah, you know, I guess, you know, like, I don't know what my perception was, you know, it's just a very serious job, obviously, because especially if you're assigned to the president or whatnot, but it's like, I just kind of thought it was funny because you see on the movies or TV shows, like how intense and serious it is. And I'm just having a casual conversation with a Secret Service agent. He's like, okay, I got to go patrol. And you're like, okay, cool. So, and that was just, you know, like I said, the commissioning alone. And then afterwards, we had a reception on the, not on the pier where we were at, but it, like kind of in the parking area. They cleared that out and they put up like this tent and we had a reception. And, you know, it was kind of cool where we went there and had good food, drinks, stuff like that. A bunch of personnel going and we're going there. And, you know, it's pretty neat to participate in it. And you're like, eh, it's kind of, you know, a fancy gathering to be a part of. And they had a few speeches there and we ate some nice food and kind of having a few drinks like good sailors do. I was only 19 at the time, so I didn't participate, in case anyone's wondering. But, you know, but then President Bush came out again, and he ended up doing a reenlistment ceremony for sailors and swearing them in for their next reenlistment. So that was cool. And then caught me off guard because I didn't really hear anything about it at the time. But then we had a stand-up gig afterwards as our entertainment with Jay Leno. He came out and he did like kind of a stand-up gig, and we're like, I was kind of one of those few, because I guess few people heard about it, so like, that's cool. And I was just like, you know, because they mentioned we'll have some form of entertainment, so that's cool. And you see Jay Leno up there, and I was like, wow, Jay Leno, the talk show host. And I was like, cool. So, you know, it was neat to see that, and it was pretty fun. So I think you know, grow up in Hoonah, you know, people are curious on where you're at, and you know, you stay in touch with those closest to you and keep them in the loop. So even to this day, I'm really tight knit with my family. So even if I say if I travel for work around here in Southeast Alaska, you know, keep them in the loop on what's going on. I actually, because I travel so much, I'd always come home for, you know, for my leave. You know, I'd always target the holidays, the ones I can make it for, and try to come home and at least once a year. You know, oftentimes I think other than the times that I was on deployment, I think it was like 2009, I think I only went home like before my deployment, and then 2009 into 2010, I kind of was on deployment there, and then after deployment, took time off, went home, and then I was back in Virginia, and then I think I went home for Thanksgiving that year, and then, you know, skipped out on Christmas and whatnot. So, you know, I'd always generally just go home for leave. I felt being so far away, like if we had long weekends or something, me and my friends would, you know, just go find something to do, you know, somewhere nearby, hang out, kind of get used to going to Virginia, which, you know, in hindsight, it's kind of cool to get comfortable around there, because it, I didn't want to go there at all at first. As much as I wanted to travel and, you know, see new places and stuff, I was hoping out of A school they'd send me to the West Coast, and that wasn't an option. It was all to Virginia. And Virginia was just something I just wasn't interested in, which, in hindsight, I'm glad that I went there, because there's so much military history and military culture and stuff like that, and it did force me to get out of my shell and get comfortable living somewhere. And I think, what better way to get you comfortable? I didn't want to go there whatsoever. I rather went overseas, you know, to go see what it's like living in another country. If I had my option, it'd be West Coast, because it's like, you know, hopefully I'm at a command where I'm traveling, and then I could just easily get home from there. Living out in Virginia, it forced me to kind of get comfortable out there, make friends, explore the area, and, you know, hang out. And then that way, like when the holidays came around, I just save up my leave days and head home. You know, when you are exiting out and the remaining leave days you have the option to take that time off and let your contract expire, still get paid, but you can go home early or whatnot. And kind of surprised my family coming home. Remember the official day too. It was kind of bittersweet because I didn't want to get out at the time. Fortunately, during my particular time, my rating was pretty overmanned, and didn't have the option to reenlist because there's so many people in there. And in order to advance in the Navy, you have to take a test, you got to pass it. But then if you're in a case where you're overmanned, you have to not only pass it, but then you, because there's going to be a lot of people who pass technically in that percentile that's passable. But then if you're overmanned, they only take the ones that are like really suit, like, you know, kind of like the top, like 1%. I think like even in some cases, it was like, you know, like point something percent, you know, under 1% basically. And, I remember passing the exam every time and felt like I did everything right, because one thing that counts towards you is volunteering for deployment. You know, one thing I haven't touched on is, like, you know, deploying on the USS Nimitz. I volunteered for that deployment to get the experience to go back to my new command at the bush and come back as a bit better asset with more skills and knowledge of the job. And well, unfortunately, you know, it kind of didn't translate over because, you know, it felt like, you know, kind of where it's like bittersweet. It's kind of like, felt like I got lost in the shuffle, because one of the things that made it difficult is when I came back, I was like, well, I got these qualifications, I got the experience, you know, I got, you know, like qualifications that a low ranking guy shouldn't particularly, they're not required to get, you go out of your way to get, so that's supposed to look good. Never got in trouble, you know, whatnot, but, you know, I was also, because I was on deployment and kind of, you know, not visibly there with the folks there, and you know, they're kind of pushing along people that were there, you know, kind of got lost in the shuffle. So when it came up for my reenlistment, they, I didn't get that option because at the particular time, the military were doing a lot of cutbacks, and that included, you know, contracts, stuff like that. And unfortunately, my contract, you know, was kind of, you know, got lumped up into that. So, you know, it wasn't a bad thing because it was still an honorable discharge, you know, didn't get out because I was in trouble or anything, still, you know, titled to benefits and stuff like that. But, you know, I was really, you know, really kind of getting in the flow of the Navy and really want to try a different command and really try to see what shore duty's like, you know, maybe go overseas. There's a lot of goals that I had and just didn't have that option. So remember the day my service ended being, you know, because I took the rest of my leave days, went home, and then, you know, kind of on the day when it elapsed, you know, kind of like a bittersweet ending, because it's like, you know, I felt like there was so much more to offer, and, you know, it kind of, you know, suddenly and abruptly ended in a, you know, I felt I did everything right, you know, felt I was working hard and kind of got lost in the shuffle, and that was unfortunate. But at the same time, met really cool people, really, really, you know, friends that I'm still in contact with today. Got to see, literally go around the world and see countries I never thought I'd see. Got cool experiences, and that's pretty rare in just a four-year enlistment. So, you know, in that aspect, I'm definitely blessed and fortunate. But, you know, how much fun I was having and how much cool experience I was having, I felt like there was more to give and more to offer. And, you know, unfortunately that abruptly ended, but, you know, I guess, you know, things happen for a reason. So, you know, kind of roll on and go try new things. I kind of just went to work kind of in the summertime. And at the time my family owned a private tour company working out of Hoonah, and I just kind of needed to get to work. They needed a tour guide. And so, you know, I just went right into that, worked, you know, the season, finished that out. Afterwards, kind of enjoyed the fall, you know, went on some hunting trips, you know, and then in the wintertime, I went and got my 100-ton captain's license, and then came back, you know, and kind of worked, you know, a couple of other seasons as a whale watching captain for my parents' company, and then, you know, started a little bit of college after that using the GI Bill and whatnot. So, mentioned earlier about going on the bush when it was a new ship, but because it was a new ship, I volunteered to go on the USS Nimitz, which, you know, fun little fact, you know, the Nimitz is the first of the Nimitz class carriers, and there's 10 of them, and the Bush is the last of the Nimitz class carriers. So I've been around the world on the first and the last Nimitz class carrier. But I volunteered for the first deployment on the Nimitz out of San Diego. They flew us from Virginia. We laid over in Kansas on, I believe it was an Air Force base for, you know, an hour or so, and just went over to San Diego, hung out there for a few days, and took off on deployment. And on that deployment, I got to go to Japan, Singapore, Thailand, Malaysia, Hong Kong, went into the Persian Gulf, and we went to Bahrain and UAE, or also Abu Dhabi or Dubai. Went there twice on that deployment. So, and that was so much fun. The, growing up, you know, one of the things that was interesting was, you know, I remember, like, you know, going to school, you know, being a school kid in Hoonah, and, you know, going to the library and got to pick out books. And I always pick out stuff on just, you know, let everyone pick out, you know, kind of things that seem interesting in the realm of fantasy or whatnot. And I always kind of just like reading about places. And I remember, like, Japan always, ever since I was a kid, being on that list. And it was literally the first foreign country I ever been to. And remember, like, my first day walking around there, just kind of like, kind of a little culture shock. I was like, I'm actually in Japan. Like, I literally, like, a, you know, little school kid in Hoonah reading, like, someday I'll go there. And it's like, now I'm here. Like, I don't know what to do. I better find something to do. So, you know, walked around town the first day, and then, you know, ended up, you know, exploring more and, you know, checking out more of the city and, you know, the culture and stuff like that. And as cool as it is to go to these places too, the kind of the only downside, you know, I can't can't complain too much. I got there for free, got to experience it. But, you know, you're also on military time too, and you're only there for like a couple of days. So it's like, I would love to each and every one of these places go back and spend a little more time. And, you know, on top of that, it opened me up to want to go travel more places nearby that I haven't been to. But, you know, like, you know, Japan, it was awesome being the first foreign country I ever been. Singapore, like, I always heard of it, but, you know, never knew too much about it. And I went there, one of the most crazy, beautiful, cleanest cities I've ever been to. It's like somebody erected like a big city in a jungle. You walk through, you know, like the, it, I believe it, this is true too, you know, it's worth looking up, but I believe like the way they did design the buildings there is like, so like, you know, plants can grow out of them and whatnot. I mean, you walk through like, you know, the downtown shopping area and there's big lit up buildings with like jungle trees, you know, in the middle of them. And you're like, that's so cool and crazy. And amazing people, amazing food, awesome sights. And then, you know, we go up and we kind of spend our time on the Nimitz deployment going to the Middle East. And, you know, I remember it was kind of like the longest stretch I was out to sea. I think it was like 55 or 56 days, you know. I know sailors have been longer. It's certainly not the longest, but it's my, you know, personal longest. Just straight, and being on an aircraft carrier, you're on a float city anyways. And like I, you know, mentioned earlier, like growing up around Huna, you know, I've been on, you know, a lot rougher vessels on a lot rougher seas, you know, so it was pretty comfortable. 55 days for me on a carrier wasn't much, but you know, there's, you could tell I was getting to some of them. And so we hit Bahrain, and Bahrain was probably out of all the places I've been the my least favorite. It wasn't terrible, but it was kind of the one that was more not so friendly to Americans. You know, they have establishments that are clearly like, you know, Bahrain is like the Navy headquarters in the Middle East region. So we have a big base there. But then even if you get out, there's like certain establishments that are more American friendly. And then there's like areas that are like a little more hostile, and they make it more vocal there than anywhere that I've been to. Probably the one I did go venture out a little bit, but, you know, a little too intense, especially the second time I was there was kind of the, I didn't see nothing too crazy, but like, 2011, the second time I was there, is like year of the Arab Spring, and that was kind of one of the regions that had a lot of intensity there. So kind of just glimpsed out in town. It was a little too crazy for my taste, so it's like, well, you know, there's a nice beach resort near the near the base, so I might as well just go there, hang out at the pool, be safe, you know. I didn't find nothing cool here the first time around, so yeah, don't care to go out in an angry mob crowd anyways. So Bahrain, you know, it's still interesting, you know, being in such a different country and seeing, you know, different culture, but it was a little too intense for my case. Now, you know, that's just my experience. I mean, imagine, you know, how some of, you know, these soldiers, Marines, and, you know, other military members who deploy to more intense areas, you know. So if that's how I felt going to, like, Bahrain, which is more American-friendly, like, man, you know, props to the people who go to more intense regions there. So, and then on the Nimitz deployment, we go to Dubai twice, which is, like, consider all things considered in the Middle East, it's like the absolute opposite. They have their issue, like people do their like it shocks me reading how intense things are there, because I've been there four times and seen none of that. But yet you look at their laws and they're technically really strict, but I feel like they must pick and choose them accordingly, because it's like, I didn't know you're not supposed to drink in public in certain areas. We certainly did, but it's like you could get in serious trouble for doing that. And you see on the news sometimes people do, I guess. But like we were there, and we're like, wow, you know, they didn't mind us. You know, they must like their business or something. You know, also going to like one of the biggest, most extravagant malls I ever been to. I don't know if you're a mall guy, but it's almost like you go to like a little. Not to mention the, you know, Dubai Mall has an indoor ski slope, which I took advantage of when indoor skiing in the Middle East. You know. You go see, you know, cool beach resorts there, and you go, you know, on a sunset safari, and, you know, get a, you know, ride on a little ATV track, you know, kind of a little ATV racetrack, you know, ride on a camel, eat some good, you know, Arabian style food. So see the world's tallest building and just cool sights. So it's like, you know, complete opposite, you know, of what people think. You know, being there four times and being to Bahrain twice, you know, people ask you, you go to the Middle East, and it's like, yeah, you know, we're supposed to go. And everyone, you know, because of the tensions there, it's like, well, you stay safe and whatnot, and, you know, kind of people worried about you. And it's like, you know, and I get it, you know, things can happen anywhere, but I'm like, man, if only you guys could see how UAE or Dubai or Abu Dhabi is like, you'd probably want to go with me, you know. So it's like, it's not as bad, you know, maybe skip Bahrain, you know, but it's like, you know, that place was pretty cool. So that was just on my first deployment, hitting that. On the way out, we stopped in Thailand, and that was awesome. You know, one of the favorite places. Like, that's definitely a must go back to because it's so beautiful, cool culture, awesome food, super cheap. You know, it was really fun to go there and experience the culture and hang out and kind of, you know, being in, on deployment and stacking up some money, you know, live like a king there, quite frankly. You know, I stayed at like a, you know, 4-star hotel for like 3 nights, and I calculated up and I believe spent like $95 American just to stay there. I, you know, something in that realm. And like, I saw how it added up on their currency, and I kind of forgot it was in their currency. So I was like, gosh, I spent that much money. That sucks. And it's like, then I was like, oh wait, it's in theirs. And I calculated up. It's like, God, I didn't even spend $100 just to stay here and have, you know, an awesome, you know, awesome hotel and, you know, cool resort and, you know, go hang out on the beach and go, you know, experience the sights and whatnot. So, but, you know, time goes so quick in just, you know, 3-4 days that it's like, gosh, I got to go back to Thailand. Went to Malaysia. That was pretty cool. You know, kind of check it out there. But after that, the last port before we came back to the States on the Nimitz deployment was in Hong Kong. And we were there for Chinese New Year. And I ended up actually kind of getting, you know, there's a bug going around on the ship and I ended up catching it. And kind of bad enough to where if you went to sick bay, they, you know, you'd have to, they'd make you stay in and whatnot. And I was like, there is no way missing out on that. So it was kind of rough. I kind of had a soldier on and, you know, kind of, you know, go out and, you know, I felt I could have enjoyed it more had I not been sick. But I was like, it's Hong Kong on Chinese New Year and these fireworks and light shows and festivity. I'm not sitting. And, you know, most of the ports we have a pier, but Hong Kong was one of the few that we had to anchor out and take, you know, tender boats in. I was like, man, I'm just going out and experiencing it. And he ended up, I'll look for medicine ashore. You know, it's like, I'll, you know, I'm not missing out on this. And I'm glad I didn't because, you know, that would have, you know, been a real bummer to stay in on the ship. And sometimes you just got to live life, power through. And, you know, if you get a chance to, you know, go somewhere cool for one of their biggest holidays, probably suck it up and go do it. So, you know, but then on the second deployment, you know, I was on the George H.W. Bush. We, you know, we're on their maiden deployment. You know, I got experience England, Spain, Italy, France, and then we went back to the Middle East, you know. And the memorable thing on that deployment was England being our first foreign, you know, our first port on that particular cruise. And that was the George H.W. Bush's first overseas port anyways. So when we got to Portsmouth, England, there was, you know, a big reception on board for, you know, like high-end people in England, and you know, they had a big reception for military and politicians and stuff like that come on board and check it out. And England was really cool too because it was one of the most welcoming countries to us, you know, the UK being one of you know, probably the US's closest ally in the world. And you know, we get a briefing every time we hit port on do's and don'ts, and you know, there was kind of surprise because they made England, yeah, you know, English folks sound a little more intense than they were, you know, and they can be feisty and stuff for sure. But Thailand and England were like the most welcoming. Like Thailand being, you know, a poor third world country, I think, you know, one, you know, Thai people are really nice and real hospitable anyways. But on top of it, you know, we bring a lot of money to their economy. So it's like, man, come see us and spend money and let's party and have fun. England, you know, just closest, you know, allies to the United States. So it's like they were very welcoming everywhere we went. And I got to go to London and, you know, one of the cities I always wanted to see growing up. Been to Portsmouth, ended up volunteering, running my first, and to this day, only half marathon. Took part in that because I was like, you know, it'd be cool. I'm in good shape. And it was like it was a charity event for like kids. I forget the exact cause, but I remember it's like something to do with helping like the youth out or something like that. And it was like, you know, I even forget the town's name, but it was a nice little like farm town, you know, and, you know, a nice like 13-mile track to run and whatnot. And it was fun, great experience, a little rough when you're running on an hour and a half of sleep and you were in London all night, but made it and actually did a good time and it was fun. And, you know, like I said, English people everywhere we went were super nice and fun and whatnot. Also going to Italy and getting to go to Rome and, gosh, I must have gained like 20 pounds just in our couple of days in Italy with all the good Italian food. You know, because one of the things I do for fun in all these ports is try to go to a restaurant, check it out, and randomly, if I can't read the menu, try to randomly order something off of there. And some of these places, you're kind of like, I hope this is good. I might have to reorder. But, you know, or sometimes it looks good and smells good, and then you find out it's super spicy or something. You're like, oh, my gosh. You know, I like spicy food, but, you know, there's kind of a limit, too. But, like, Italy was one of those places that was, like, everything, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack, dessert. You know, it was like everything was on point. So, you know, that's a good place to go. And then going to France, I got to go to Marseille, France, which is France's second largest city, and it's its oldest city, you know, from what I understand. And you can hop on the fast train there and, like, I think 3 hours be in Paris. So I went to Paris, had to go check out Paris and, you know, check out the Eiffel Tower and see Notre Dame, you know, check out the sites, eat some good French food. That's another one that kind of surprised me. A lot of, especially like sailors that I work with who've been to France before, like say they're a little tough on Americans, but through my experience, you know, they're really nice to me. Everyone was really friendly, and you know, whether I was in Paris, Marseille, you know, those were the only two places I went while I was there. But you know, like I had friends that go to like other towns nearby, go to Monaco. I want to go there. Ended up switching because one of my friends didn't get to go to Paris. So I was like, well, go back there. But it was fun. And so, but like everywhere I went, everyone was really cool. You know, definitely, you know, it was worth, you know, going there 2 days in a row regardless. It's like, I felt like wherever I went there, how friendly and welcoming they were, at least to me. I was like, oh, I think, you know, regardless where we go, we're going to have a good time here. So, but it was a great experience, you know, just that traveling part right there. How I think about war, you know, it makes me realize how war, you know, is something that's definitely, you know, unfortunate for anyone I have to get into. It results in destruction and death. And really am grateful to, you know, come from this country, the United States, and have the military that we have because, you know, no matter how crazy things get, you know, America, you know, is an idea, believes in, you know, freedom and democracy for people, like, obviously for our citizens, but, you know, you also try to promote these ideas around the world. You know, I think despite all the ups and downs, you know, there's a reason why a lot of people, when they do leave their countries, oftentimes look to come to the United States to make it. And I think, you know, we have, you know, great idea as a country. And then also our military, in regards to like war, it's like, you know, we're in very good hands, you know, in the sense that, you know, our, you know, in all five branches of service, you know, I truly do believe this, you know, not just saying this just because, you know, I was in there or whatnot, but you truly do believe that, you know, we're the best in all aspects. We have better military technology. Also, if we live up to our ideas, you know, it's, you know, we're not here to conquer and dominate everyone. We're here to, you know, stand up to people who are trying to, you know, oppress other people. And, you know, you go through history and, you know, like I said, you got our ups and downs, but, you know, when you stick to the American ideas, are the good guys. And I'm glad to be on the side, by and large, that believes in that and has a military equipped to stand up to that. A lot of times, you know, our militaries, even though we're in war, we're oftentimes in peacekeeping missions and, you know, helping out in disaster relief areas. So it's not just, you know, a war fighting thing, but, you know, if we have to, I'm glad, you know, that we're, our military is equipped, you know, to, you know, stand up and be ready to go to defend folks there. So definitely it's good to be on the side, you know, as long as we live up to our, you know, ideals there. It's like, you know, I believe that we are the better force with a better message, you know, with a lot of militaries who want to, you know, emerge just for the sake of being dominant, but don't have the, you know, they don't have the idea of freedom for, you know, their citizens, though. They just want to be, you know, tough, dominant, authoritarian. And it's like, you know, America, you know, doesn't represent that, you know, and I'm glad that we're at least on the side for that, you know. Now, with that being said, you know, it's up to the citizens and everyone to, you know, pay attention, elect officials that, you know, push, keep these ideas alive and promote them around the world. And, you know, not just, I mean, not going to get like, you know, political here or anything, but just like, it's just good to pay attention to each side, you know, like we're in a time where politics is, you know, I always say it's like, makes sense our big elections land on Olympic years because, you know, it seems like nowadays everyone treats them like sporting events as opposed to, you know, something that you should, that's a little more complex and you should take a little more serious. And so it's like, you know, it's definitely do your research, promote regardless of the side of the spectrum, do your research and promote people who are going to keep these ideas alive. Everybody's a little right, a little wrong. What we need to do is, you know, we're on the same team at the end of the day. There's no need to be tribal on just your opinions there, and, you know, just stick to those guns regardless, you know, whether you're, you know, Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, Independent, or anything. In this country, we're all on the same team. So, you know, it's like definitely, you know, pay attention so we can get people in there to keep these American ideas alive and relevant in the world, you know, because we do have the military fighting force that, you know, is the best in the world to protect that and defend that. And, you know, it's up to us citizens to do our due diligence to elect these officials, not just on big levels, local levels. Definitely, I got to say, you know, it's awesome being a veteran from Huna and a Native veteran, particularly because Native people, first people to live on the land in the United States of America, and yet to this day still sign up to, you know, defend, you know, our country and stuff like that. Also coming from a town of Huna, which, you know, is said to have the most veterans served per capita than anywhere in the United States. You know, it's a proud tradition. A lot of Huna folks, you know, through all the ups and downs, veterans past and present, you know, do seem to be proud of their time contributing to this country. And I'm proud to be amongst these people who are, you know, stepped up in every era and still represent even to this day in all branches of service. Any young folks out there who are looking for a path, you know, do consider the military. You know, I mean, especially if you're fresh out of high school, it does seem like a big step, but, you know, it's worth doing your research. You know, if you do it, make yourself as valuable as you can. You know, study hard for your ASVAB, get a job that's more important, work to move up the ranks. It's like, you know, it's a great opportunity, you know, because whether you do one term like me, or if you, you know, stay in, you know, if you stay in and make a career out of it, I do think you'd come out for the better. You know, I came out a lot more, you know, quiet kid from, you know, the village of Huna, Alaska. You know, I feel like it came out comfortable anywhere in the world and glad to represent the town, yet also really glad to get out and, you know, take more chances and you know, more open to doing things. Just don't see how you, you know, don't come out, you know, more skilled and more trained. So, you know, Huna's got a proud history of veterans representing the country. And from the looks of it, you know, it looks like, you know, continue going on. So don't be afraid to be a part of that, you know, worthwhile.